The following presentation was made available by Inspiration Express as part of the Kisser Shulchan Aruch calendar program. There are many more free lectures and resources available at www.kitzer365.org. Today's lecture is given by Rabbi Micha Cohen.
Simen Kuf Samch Aleph Dinei Chatzitza. The word chatzitza means a separation, and what it's referring to is the laws of what constitutes a separation between a person's body, in our situation, this woman who's going to the mikveh, between her body and the water. Now, to give a little background, the Torah tells us that v'rachatz b'sara b'mayim, that a person who is tameh, they should wash their basar, their flesh, in water. And the Gemara learns that the entire basar needs to go into the water, which means to say that there shouldn't be anything separating between the person's body and the water. For example, if a person's in a submarine, so they're technically in water, but their body doesn't have much contact. So the Torah tells us, the way the Gemara understands, is that the body has to come in actual contact with the water. Now, the question becomes, how much of a separation is a problem? Now, there's two points over here. The first point is that if a person's not fully submerged in the water, they're just meaning to say that a hand is sticking out of the water, then that's definitely not good. Even a hair, right? That's why a person has to be careful that when they go to the mikveh, all the hairs go inside, because the hairs are a part of the body, and if it floats to the top, then it's going to be a problem. And that's why they're supposed to have someone make sure that when they go into the mikveh, they don't have these issues. Now, once a person's body is completely submerged in the water, there's a second issue that they can't have anything separating between their body and the water. Now, the Gemara says that mida araisa, from the Torah law, in order for it to be a problem, it has to be raiv umakbid. It has to be covering a majority of the body, and they have to be something that they don't want on the body. If it's a miut, she'ena makbid, if it's only on part of the body, or they're not makbid in it, they don't care about it, as long as it's not covering the entire body, then mida araisa, from the Torah's point of view, it would be a good tefillah. Midrabbanan, the rabbis came and said that we need to have that miut hamakbid is a problem, even if it's on partially of the body, that's a problem. But if it's miut she'ena makbid, but if it's not covering majority and they don't care about it, so then it's okay. So the final halacha is that we have to make sure that if something's on a part of the body, that it has to be that they don't care much about it. Now, the basic concept why, if it's on part of the body, that's not a problem. So Rashi says because it's considered batel, it's considered like part of the body. So therefore, it's not considered a chatzitza. Now let's begin with the first sif. Tzricha shetitvo kol gufa im sarasel b'pam achas. A woman must submerge her entire body with all the hairs at one time. She can't do one arm, then another arm. It has to be the entire body with all the hairs at one time. V'lochein, and therefore, tzricha lashgiach b'ma'id b'aid, she must be very careful. Shelo yeh leil b'shas tevila shum dara chaitetz, there should not be upon her anything at the time of the tevila, of the submersion, something that is considered a chatzitza, an interruption between her body and the mikvah. Shafil imhu mashahu, because even if it's a small amount, lefa'amim hu chaitzes, depending on different halachic ramifications, it could be a chatzitza, for also la tevila, and it wouldn't be a proper tevila. Loi mi boi al gufa mi bachot, it makes no difference if it's on the surface of her body on the outside. Shetzrichin hamayim lavei shama, that the water needs to go there. V'kivan sheish chatzitza, because there is something interrupting har ein hamayim ba'im sham, it's interrupting the water from coming in contact with the whole body. L'afilu beis hasdarim. What about areas that are not normally exposed to water, which means, like, to say like this, and just to explain a little, there are three areas of the body when it comes to chatzitza. There are the actual surface of the skin, let's say, you know, the person's arm, right? That's something that's always visible, always would come in contact with water, right? Then you have, let's say, the armpit, right? The armpit is generally not exposed, but if a person raises their arm, then it would become exposed. That's called a base hastarim. A seser is a lesson of private, of covered. So it's a covered area. Now, the halacha is that when a person goes to the mikvah, they don't have to raise their arm. Even if the water doesn't get there, if they're in their normal position, then it's fine. But the halacha is that there can't be a chatzitza. It has to be able to come in contact with the water, even if it actually doesn't come in direct contact. So again, a regular exposed surface, like the arm itself, that has to be clean and has to come in direct contact with the water. Something that sometimes is exposed and sometimes not exposed, like an armpit, right, or say maybe different areas between the legs, these types of areas, it has to be clean, that if there would be water there, it could come in direct contact, but it doesn't necessarily have to come in contact. And the third area is in a part of the body that wouldn't come in contact with water at all, like, say, deep in the nose or deep in the ears, which we'll learn more about. So right now, the Kitzer is addressing the point that not only do the exposed areas need to be clean in order to come in contact with the water, but even areas like an armpit, like between different folds of skin, they have to be at least ro'oi l'bi'as ma'im, they have to be at least clean enough that if they would come in contact with water, that they would be able to not have any barrier in between. El afilu beis hastarim, continuing in the kitzer, even a covered area, she'in hamayim ba'im shama, that the water doesn't come there, mikol makom tzrichim she'yu ru'uyin l'bi'as ma'im, they have to be ro'oi, possible for it to come, if it would be in water, she'in derech mashal, for example, hashinayim, the teeth, afal pi she'in tzrichim she'yovoy, hamayim osech pia, even though a woman doesn't have to open her mouth, let the water go into the mouth, derech if there is something in between her teeth, let's say she ate some corn and there's some corn stuck between her teeth, or some popcorn, then it's not a good tefillah. So the point is, even though the water doesn't have to touch the teeth, but there can't be anything in between the teeth that would be a barrier if the water would touch them. As we'll explain further later. It's a very important rule that every woman needs to know. That any area in her body, they should be clean, and they should be at least able to come in contact with the water at the time of the tefillah, even if in actuality they may not necessarily come in contact. Let's continue with Siv Beis. Now the kids are going to bring, mostly quoting the Shulchan Aruch, other basic mefarshim, different examples of what's called a chatzitza, what's called a barrier, and what's not. And there's a very basic and interesting question, which is that if we mentioned that the concept of chatzitza depends on what people feel, right? Now, there is a discussion if it's just that person or people in general, but obviously the norms change from person to person, and change from time to time. So why is the Shulchan Aruch codifying what's called a chatzitza and what's not? And the answer that's given is, and truthfully, it really depends on each situation, or at least in each area of the world. But the idea of codifying it is to sort of give it a general idea that when we don't know what the norms are, we could refer to this and at least start from here. So we're discussing now, say, mucus that's in the eye that people sometimes don't care about, let's say it's actually still in the eye itself, or when it's out of the eye, then already doesn't look nice and people don't like it. So this is what he's addressing. This mucus that's in the eye, that's already out of the eye, it's a chatzitza, it's a problem, even though it's soft, so it's moist, so it's still more considered part of the body still, but nonetheless, people don't want it there, it doesn't look nice, and it's a chatzitza. But if it's in the eye still, if it's wet, if it's moist, it's not a chatzitza, because people aren't so careful with it and don't care so much about it, and it's still considered part of the eye. But if it's dry already, it's already starting to get a greenish color, so that's obviously very unsightly, then it is a problem. So the bottom line is that before a woman goes to the mikvah, she should make sure that her eyes are clean. Sif Gimel. Dam hayavish alamaka. This is a similar idea with a person has some sort of wound. So obviously, if a person has a wound, it's normal that there should be some dried blood in it at least, and a little scabbing around it. And this is what the Kitzur says. Dam hayavish. Dry blood. Sha'al hamaka. If it's on the actual maka, chaytzeitz, it's a chatzitza. Now, the idea is that this dry blood, even if it's on the wound, but you don't want it there. Verir shebaseicha, but the pus that's in it, ain't a chaytzitz, it's not a chaytzitz. Now, yotza harir, now what about if this pus is already left the maka, it's on other parts of the skin, imlach ain't a chaytzitz. If it's wet, then it's not a chatzitza. It's not a problem. Yavish chaitzis. But if it's dry ready, then people don't like it, and it's a chatzitza. Now, again, this is subjective. This has to do with different times and different areas. But this is the guidelines that at least the Kitzur is giving as a starting point. Lefichach. Therefore, isha baal chatotim, a woman who has sores, shricha lachav oisim b'mayim at shisrachachu. So he says, what should he do? She should soak them in water, and they'll soften. And if they'll soften, then we say people care about them less and they're more considered part of the person's body, so therefore they're okay. So the general rule is that if a person has a scab, so if they soak the scab, it makes it soft, it makes it less bothersome, because if something's soft, it feels more like the skin, so then it's okay. And then the idea would be to gently remove anything that would come off. Whatever is left is part of her, and it's okay. V'cheng gelach al gabei maka, and same is true with the scab. Afilu imhi Mitzta'aris la'siray, even if it's painful to remove it, oya babuay's shchin or blister is tricha la'siran, they either have to be removed, oya l'racham heita b'mayim, or to soften in water. So the opinion that the kids are saying, and we're going to discuss other opinions in a second, the kids seems to be understanding that you have one of two choices with a scab. Either you can make it moist, and therefore it's not a problem, or it has to be removed. Now, other paiskim take a little bit of a different view, and this is the opinion of the Chachmas Adam, which is one of the great Paiskim as well, that says that if it can't be removed, then one could rely on the opinions that it's not a chatzitza, the scab. And the Sefer Sha'ar Mitzionah Ba'alacha on the Kitzur also brings other ones that have the same opinion. So basically, what it seems to be is the best idea is when a person has a scab, that they should soak it as much as possible to sort of moisten it, and that will be fine. If that can't be done or it doesn't really work, so then, according to the Chachmas Adam, at least one could go as is. The Kitzur Shulchan Aruch seems to have a more stringent view. Another important thing is that the Chachmas Adam says is that if a person has hanging pieces of skin, so he says if the water could come all around it because they're loose, then it's okay, because we can assume that the water will get all around it. This is the opinion of the Chachmas Adam as well. Now, obviously, with these types of questions, it's always good to contact the rabbi, but we're learning some general rules to give a background as far as these things go. Let's continue with Sif Dalet. Ritiya. Ritiya is like a bandage, al gabi amaka, that's on the wound. Chaitzas, it's a chatzitza. Now, there is a discussion about this, because we know that a person who has a bandage on their wound obviously wants it there. The question only is that a person wants it there now because they have a wound, but they'd rather not have the wound at all. So this seems to be a little bit of a point of a dispute as far as at what point is a bandage a chatzitza or not. Another discussion that comes up with this would be stitches. Now, stitches are pretty small, pretty minute, so therefore they're not so noticeable. And you could argue that, listen, a person needs them there, so they shouldn't be a chatzitza. On the other hand, many feel that since a person wants them to come out, so therefore there would be a chatzitza. There are those that sort of go in between and say that if it's dissolvable, so you're never going to plan to take them out, so then they become part of the person's body. But if they're not dissolvable, then there would be a chatzitza. So again, this is definitely a question to ask one's rabbi, but that's a little bit of the background as far as the different opinions about it, because again, it's something that you sort of want there, but sort of don't want there. Let's continue. V'gam metiyos, and also bandages, shemenichem oisin lezman, shalosh arba chadoshim. Now, there was a type of bandage in the times of the Kitzer. It's really been quoted from a different sefer, the Tshuva Me'ahava, that says that they had a sort of bandage that had ointment on it, and it would stay on for a few months, and then it would fall off. And there was no way of taking it off. It was totally stuck to the skin. You would have to tear the skin with it. This woman says, listen, I got used to having it, and I'm not makpet on it. So the opinion of the Kitzer is that it is a chatzitza, and again, this is a lot of discussion about, but the bottom line is, anytime a person has a cast or some sort of medical, you know, implant, something that's on the body or bandaging that's going to be there when the person goes to the mikveh, it's definitely a serious question that a competent rabbi should be consulted about. A woman who has a wound and it got reopened. Now, obviously, we have to realize that the Kitzer was written, you know, over 100, 150 years ago, and they obviously did things medically different than we do today. So he's describing that a person has this open wound, and what they would do is they would put inside of it some sort of pieces from fibers from clothing that somehow would help it heal. Edim shel pishtan, that they would put these pieces of linen. And what would happen would be those pieces would become embedded under the skin. And even when you remove the bandage, those pieces remain underneath the skin, because they're deeply in underneath the surface of the skin. They are a chatzitza. This is the opinion of the Tshuva Me'ahava. Now, there's a problem with this opinion, which is that generally speaking, anything that's not noticeable on the outside, meaning to say that's underneath the skin, right? Let's say a person gets some ink on their fingers. So if they wash off whatever's on the surface and there's just a stain beneath the surface of the skin, that just like a person doesn't have to worry about something deep inside the body, so a person doesn't have to worry what's underneath the surface of the skin. Now, the reason why the Tshuva Me'ahava is stringent about it is because he says, since it's going to come out, so it's like it came out already. The opinion of the Tshuva Me'ahava itself is not everyone agrees to it, because many feel that since, at the end of the day, right now, it's submerged underneath the skin, it's not a problem. So again, the Kitzer in this area as well quotes a stringent opinion. There are those that say differently, and this is not something that we really have today, but if a person does have an application of it, then they obviously need rabbinic guidance. Siv hey. L'chluchei tzaya shalabasar. Now, a person who has is dirty from sweat or other, you know, bodily fluids, you know, excrement, shalabasar, that's on the skin, machmas zeya, that's because of sweat, in this yabshu, if they dried up already, so that's considered really not nice, so chaytisin, then it's a problem, it's a chatzitza, it's a separation. Now, mamun shalabasar, which would be sort of beads of sweat, dry beads of sweat, v'hum mashlefam yadu shal adam muluchachas betit, that a person's hands are either dirty from mortar, or from dough, or from sweat, so a person sort of rubs their hands together and you get these like beads, these pieces of these things that are stuck to the skin, and they're made like these beads. They're a problem. Why? Because these are definitely things you don't want, you know, pieces of sweat or mortar or cement or dough are definitely things you don't want on your skin, so that's obviously a chatzitza. Let's continue with Siv Vav. Hadiyoy, ink, hacholav, milk, dvash, honey, sraf hateino, sap from a fig, sraf hatut, and sap from other types of berries, sraf hacharuv, sap from a carob, sraf hashikma, another type of fruit, yveshim chaytisin. Why? A person has some dry sap on them. It's very uncomfortable and it's very unsightly. So it's a chatzitza, it's a problem. Lachim and mechaytzim, if it's still wet, some reason it's still considered not as bad, and therefore it's not a chatzitza. Shar kol asrafim and other forms of sap, afilu lachim mechaytzim, even if they're wet, they're a problem. V'chein adam and blood as well. People don't like to have blood on them. Afilu lach, even if it's wet, chaytzit. So the bottom line is there is a differentiation between something that's wet that people tolerate it more, something that's dry people tolerate it less. But at the end of the day, it's going to be subjective to what people's norms are. Sif Zayin. Tseva. What about makeup, coloring? Shatsoivas Hanashim Pneim Vreg Fyedeim Vesar Reishim. They paint their faces or their hair with it. Ein Echaitit. It's not a chatzitza. Why not? Because they want it there. V'chein Yisha She Umnu Shalach L'tzpoy Begadim Echadim. A woman who would dye clothing, that was her profession in those days. And because of that, she always has stains on her hands. And all the women that have this profession, they generally don't care about it. It's not a chatzitza. So there's a few points to make over here. Number one, there's a question, why exactly is this paint on the face okay? So there are two explanations. One is that it's the type of paint that gets absorbed underneath the skin that we mentioned before. So there's nothing really there. That's one reason. The other reason is because they want it there. Now, the question of wanting it there is a little bit unclear because, for example, women like to have makeup, but there are times they want to remove it. And also, if the makeup is the way they like it to be, then it's one thing. Once they go into the water, usually, it's not the way they like it to be. So wearing, going to the mikvah with makeup is sort of problematic, and that's why generally people remove their makeup. Now the question is, what is the case of the Shulchan Aruch? It's possibly where it's absorbed underneath the skin, or somehow it's very, very permanent, and therefore doesn't come off easily, and it could be considered part of her body. A good example of this would be, say, hair dye, which, you know, it's permanent and it stays there for a very long time. That could be an example of something that would not be a chatzitza. Now, as far as a person who is, their profession is to do something that stains their hands, so again, if it's absorbed in the skin itself, that could be itself a reason to be lenient. The other thing is that the Kitzer mentions here, which is taken from the Shulchan Aruch, is that if the people in that profession, let's say a mechanic, right, their hands are always black. So if in that profession they feel it's normal to go like that, and even maybe they'll go somewhere and they'll clean themselves up a little bit, but at the end of the day, it's normal to walk around with that color on themselves, so then that would make it normal for them, even though for other people in different professions, it wouldn't be okay. But for them, but because they're in that profession, that's fine. Sif Chas. B'tzoi Shetachas HaTzipayrin. Now, what about if there's dirt or other things underneath the fingernail? Yesh Chilukum, there are differences. How much is a problem or not a problem? Ukfar Nagu, Lachtach Tziporni Yadayim, and the custom is to trim the nails for a glam of the feet, Kaidam HaTvila, before the Tvila. And the main thing is it's a way of making sure that they're clean. V'tizar L'sarfam. Now, he mentioned another thing, which is nothing to do with Hilchas Nida, but it's a general concept, that in the times of the Gemara, they understood that stepping on cut fingernails and toenails is some sort of sakana, some sort of danger, so therefore it's not a good idea to leave them around, so they should be burnt or be disposed of properly. Ki im yidrach aleihem ba'al or adam acher, because the people will step on them, mesukan, it's some sort of danger. V'shabbos v'yomtiv. So what happens on Shabbos or yomtiv? A woman goes to the mikvah, she looks at her hands, and sure enough, she forgot to cut her nails, or she forgot to cut one of them. Im shokcha l'chatchan kaidim, she forgot to cut them. So can a non-Jew do it for you? So the Kitzer says, yesh matirin l'chatchan alei de'nachris, you could be lenient to do it like that, because since you don't want the nail, so therefore, it's melech ha'she'en etzricha l'gufo, you don't really want it, and therefore it's permitted through a non-Jew. That would be one reason. Other Paiskim say that as long as the nail is clean, you could go as is, that you don't have to cut it at all. That would be another way of approaching this issue. What if the finger is blown up because she has a burn or something like that there that's inflamed it? But you can't really clean underneath it. If it's so inflamed that whatever's under it, you can't even see it. It's not a chatzitza because, again, people can't really see it, so they don't really care about it. If a woman forgot to cut her nails, and actually says one nail, which is interesting, and she went to the mikvah like, as is, if she remembered before she had relations with her husband, the Kitzur recommends her going to the mikvah again, and if she remembered afterwards, she should ask a question to a rabbi. Now, there's a discussion, what is the problem over here? If you notice carefully, the Kitzur says tziparin, which is a singular language, which means she cut all her nails, she just forgot one. That actually could be worse, because if she wouldn't have cut any of her nails, then she wants her nails to be there, so therefore it's not a chatzitza. But if she cut all of them except for one, so she's showing that she really doesn't want that one to be there. And since she wants it to cut it off, it could be like a chatzitza. That would be the argument. Now, many Paiskim don't feel that it's a chatzitza at all, and the reason is because since it's still part of her body, even if she's planning on cutting it off, it's not such a problem. So therefore, they say that if it was clean, it's enough. That's the main thing. But again, because there is a dispute involved, we generally always are careful to cut the nails, and if one forgot, or if one can't do it for some reason, and they're clean, then according to many opinions, that is enough. Sif Tess. Tizar lahasar kadam tefillah hanazom v'atabois. She should be careful to remove before she goes to the mikvah rings and earrings. Now, the Ravid brought in the Rush asks an interesting question. He says, a woman who always wears her ring, why is it a chatzitza? It's part of her. To which he answers that since sometimes she takes it off when she wants to knead dough or do something like that, so therefore that's enough to show that it's not really a part of her. Now, if a woman always keeps on a ring and she never takes it off at all, the custom is definitely to take it off. There may be an argument that she doesn't really have to, but again, it's not so clear. Sif Yud. Now, we mentioned this a little bit before, but he's going to talk about it more now, that a woman needs to clean her teeth, in between her teeth, before she goes to the mikvah. Why? Mishum demotzei hu shegimsa bein shinel shirei machal, because it's common she's going to find a piece of food, a little piece of meat, something that gets caught in between the teeth. And because people don't like it there, because it's uncomfortable, then it's going to be a problem. And even though the teeth don't go directly into the water, but they have to be at least roile b'yismayim, they have to be at least able to go into the water, so therefore it is a problem. V'im tavla umatza eze davar b'neyem oidavakwem, because if she goes to the mikveh and afterwards finds something stuck or in between the teeth, also a tefillah, the tefillah wasn't good. So that's why it's a good idea, before a woman goes to the mikveh, to maybe that they stay away from taffies or popcorn, or things that get caught in between the teeth. The yesh guys, and some have the custom shlei lechol basar b'yom lechtan lebeis tefila. Those that have a custom not to eat meat on the day they go to the mikvah. Mepnei shabasar nichnas b'nashinayim, because the meat goes in between the teeth. Yosem yishar eichel more than other foods. The yesh lechol shafil tanaka shenel, and you could be concerned that even if she's going to clean her teeth, shami yishar mimeno, maybe a little will be left. And it's a good custom. And this is a common custom that women don't eat meat on the day they go to the mikvah. Some want to know, what about ground meat? Some say, well, the custom is a custom on all meat. Others say, well, if it's ground, it's not such a problem. But in any event, what I think is most important is that a woman on the day she goes to the mikvah should avoid foods that could be really sticky and be difficult to clean her teeth well. But b'Shabbos v'yontif. Now, on Shabbos and Yontif, she'ochlin basar, that eat meat, so what happens? Say she has to go second night of Yontif, so is she not allowed to eat meat the whole Yontif until that point? So the answer is no. She'ochlin basar, that they eat meat, tizor l'naka b'yoyser, so she should be careful to clean as best she could, but she is allowed to eat meat. So basically, the custom is, if you don't have a need to eat meat, if there's no sudas mitzvah or something like that, then you should avoid meat. But if there's a reason, like a mitzvah, then you could, but you should just be careful to clean as best as possible. V'tzricha kol isha lizar, and every woman needs to be careful. Shalai toichal shum maichal ben chafifa l'tvila. Another point. Then once the woman actually seriously prepared to go to the mikvah, so she shouldn't eat anything in between, obviously on a regular night when she's going right away. And also the day that she goes to the mikvah, she should avoid sticky things like dough, or wax, that shouldn't stick onto anything. So some say, well, she should avoid taking a waxing on that day, because a lot of times the wax sticks to her eyebrows. So that's another good idea to avoid. Now, if she does go to the mikvah like that, then the question is going to be, does she really care so much about that little wax that stuck to her or not? And that would determine whether or not it's really a chatzitza if she does go with the wax on her eyebrows. Ach b'Erev Shabbos, but on Erev Shabbos, im darko lalush ba'atzma l'chvod Shabbos, that if she usually needs dough for the honor of Shabbos, al timna, again, if it comes for a need for it, then she doesn't have to avoid it. Rav shetizor l'chertz achakach yadeh yofa yofa, but she should wash herself very well. Sif Yud Aleph. Isha sheyesh l'shen toisevis. So a woman who has a fake tooth. Now, obviously, we're talking probably around 150 years ago, and the implants were very crude, and they would come out a lot, and they would be painful, wouldn't really work. So in those situations, it was unclear what the halachic status was, and there were different opinions. Tisha l'mayra, and she should ask a competent rabbi, Eich Tisnag B'Tfila, how she should conduct herself as far as going to the mikvah. And in the parentheses, the Kitzer quotes a lot of the different works of his day that discuss the question. Now, basically, what most Paiskim today say is that it's something that's permanent, and it's you're comfortable with it. A crown, a root canal, a filling, an implant, all these things, if they're in good and it feels fine and it's in there indefinitely, that's not a problem. The question is going to be, what about something that's temporary? So some say, well, if it's going to be in for more than 30 days or for 14 days, then it's enough. Some take that approach. Some say, well, if she doesn't have, she's not planning to go yet to have it removed, that's okay. Others say that as long as is, it's strong enough that it could stay there. Meaning to say, today's even temporary fillings or crowns usually are pretty strong that they can really go months without changing it. So therefore, if it's the type of thing where she totally her mouth totally feels fine, it's not in the middle of the work. Let's say her mouth feels fine and really she could leave it there indefinitely. Then some say even if she is planning to remove it soon, it's not a problem. So again, there's definitely much more leeway with even our temporary crowns and fillings. But it's a good idea to ask one's personal rabbi to get direction exactly which opinion to follow. Now, there was a problem that many women had in those days, which is that it was known as prolapse, which is the uterus, because it's not anchored onto a bone, so it sort of falls into the vagina. And what they would do is they used to wear a tabas, they used to wear a ring inside the vagina in order to hold it up. Now the question is, she couldn't take out this ring because it's dangerous, but is that a chatzitza? So the Kitzer says, v'chein isha shi muka b'shuvar, that a woman who has this problem of this shever, of this prolapse, v'naisas tabas v'rachma, and she goes around with this ring inside her womb, she should ask a question to a competent rabbi. And in the days of the Kitzer, this is a very prevalent problem. Many of them tried to come up with a way of saying that it's okay. Some said because it's inside very deep. Some said because she needs it. If she doesn't have it, she's going to be in danger. Whatever the different reasons are to say that it's not a chatzitza, that was something that in those days was a very big discussion. And thank God today it's much less of a problem. But it's good to know the background. Sifyud Beis. Laisachos b'chaverta b'shas tefila. So it says, one woman shouldn't hold on to the other one when she's going to the mikveh, for the obvious reason, because that would be a chatzitza. The water is not going to come in contact where the person's hand is. Because the water is not going to come in to where the person's holding on. Now what if you have a woman who's, say, afraid of water, and she needs someone to hold onto her, or else she's going to be too nervous. So b'shas adchak, in a difficult situation, tatbal isha, she writes a lechaz aisa, the person who she wants to hold on to her, she should put her hand into the mikvah first. So she should get her hand wet with mikvah water, tchila, yedaba mikvah, she should put her hand into the mikvah, v'achakach techas oisa, and she should put her hand on her, lo b'koyach, ubedi b'chazak, not so tight, so therefore you have the mikvah water in between, and the grip is not so strong, ela b'dibuk b'enini, k'darach kol adam, sort of an in-between grip, and that should be fine. Sif Yud Gimel. Heichad Efsher, where it's possible, in little b'makam sheyesh b'kar g'asaitit. You shouldn't be tied in a place that there's all this cement or soot at the bottom of the mikvah. Now, today, thank God, most of the mikvahs that people go to are very beautiful and they're very clean and they're tiled. But in those days, it wasn't like that. And you would go to a mikvah and there could be a lot of mud and soot at the bottom of it. And the question is, if your feet are going to be in that soot, are you going to have a problem of a chatzitza? So he says, l'chatchila, it's proper not to immerse in such a mikvah, mishum chashash chatzitza, because perhaps that soot is considered a chatzitza. It blocks the water and the foot. But in a difficult situation, I'm sure there are cities that was the only mikvah around, then there's a custom to be lenient. Mishum destam titch v'mayim eno av kokach, first of all, because usually soot that's in the bottom of the mikvah is not going to be so thick, it's very watery, so therefore it shouldn't be a chatzitza. Aval atitcha svas hanar, but the mud that's on the side of the river shemizdabek b'raglel, that gets stuck to the feet, harihi chatzitza, then that's definitely a chatzitza. V'lachein, therefore, tzrich lizar, if she does go from the riverbank into the mikvah, she should be careful, shebebayel techanar, once she goes into the river, kadim shetitzel, before she immerses herself in the mikvah, tadia chetiv raglem and atit, she should make sure her feet are clean, shenidbach babes fasanar, that she got the mud that got on her as she went into the mikvah, im tirtzel aniach besoy chanar tachas kapas ragla eisid davar. So because of this problem, people thought maybe they should, you know, put some sort of mat into the mikvah or the river, you know, that it shouldn't be a problem of going into the tit, of going into the soot. Eisid davar shatamar ala b'shas tefila, something that she could stand on when she's in the mikvah. So this is a different issue, which is a rabbinic gzeira, that it looks like she's being tevil in something that accepts tumah. It's susceptible to tumah. So therefore, it was recommended not to do that. Tzri chalushal l'mayaros, you should get rabbinic guidance. Because if it's susceptible to tumah, then the custom is not to be tevil on it. So if she wants to put something in between her feet and the bottom of the mikveh, then she has to find something that's not going to contract tumah. Let's continue with Sif Yudal. Like sitba become a zakufa, when she goes into the mikveh, she shouldn't stand up very straight. Why? Because that's not her normal position. If she's going to stand up very straight, let's say, put her arms against her side very closely, so the water is not going to get around her arms like they normally would get around. She shouldn't bend a lot. That other parts of her body, other folds of skin would become clothed. But she sort of opens her legs a little bit in order that the water could go into the crotch area. So as a pass, like the position when a woman would be kneading dough, so her legs would be a little bit open in order that she could have good balance. Because she separates her legs a little bit so she could be able to keep a balance of Loslosh Bachizik and to knead well. Fetachas Dadeh, and under the breasts, Yanira Kedarach Shanira Bashas Shahim Enika Esatinuk. And also, she should be in the position, let's say, when she nurses a child, that it shouldn't be closed up, just sort of natural. Ve'ena Tzricha Laharchig Yachase But more than that, she doesn't have to separate her legs or any other parts of her body more than normal. She doesn't have to move her hands so much away from the body. Like the way she goes and walks. So basically, a woman should be in a normal position, her feet a little bit apart, and in a normal position, and that's fine. And wherever the water goes, it goes, and wherever it doesn't, and that's fine. But if she bends a lot, if she went to the mikveh in some abnormal position, also then it could be a problem. Because she makes sort of unusual folds in her skin, and the water doesn't go there. So because of this, as the kitzer, there's an idea, it's brought in halacha, that you shouldn't go into a mikveh that's very shallow. Why? Because if you go into a mikveh that's very shallow, how are you possibly going to get your whole body into the mikveh? So you're going to have to bend, and you have to be in an abnormal position. So therefore, the custom is that the mikveh should be above the navel 3 tefachim. So it should be around 9 inches or so above the navel. So that way, all she has to do is bend a little bit in order to get her whole head submerged. And that way, she could still be in a pretty normal position. Because in this such a situation, she could do a proper tefillah. In a difficult situation, that the water is not so high, so what's she supposed to do? She should slowly sit down in the water until her neck. And then she should sort of like easily sit down in the mikveh in a way that she could relax her body, that she could be submerged, that everything should come in contact with water. And as once all the cracks and crevices of the body sort of came into contact with water, even if they get covered up, it's still fine because a little bit of the mikvah water will still be there. And therefore, it'll be like connected to the mikvah water, similar to what we learned about the person putting their hand on the person going to the mikvah, and that will be okay. Because once the water does go into the cracks and crevices, even if it gets closed up, but it's still considered connected to the rest of the mikvah, that it's a good tefillah. If the water is really low, in a difficult situation, then she should lay down. So again, when she lays down, any part of the body that's going into the mikvah will get wet, and then she can sort of be flat and let herself, let the water get all over. But the most important thing is that the entire body should be submerged at some point in the water. Sif tezvav. As he said before, that she doesn't have to open her mouth in order that the water should go in. Now, if she's going to close her mouth very tightly, so then she's going to end up covering, say, parts of her lip, which are normally exposed, so that's not good. Not if she jumped, but if she closed it very tightly, that's not going to be a good tefillah, because she'll have covered part of her lip that is usually exposed. But again, it should be normal. It should be the way her lips are normally, one on the other. And that's fine. If she put her hair in her mouth and she went to the mikvah, it's a problem. The tefillah is not valid. Because the water didn't touch the part of the hair that was in her mouth. Let's continue with Sif Tezayin. She should not close her eyes very tightly. Again, the same problem. If she's going to do anything very tight, then it's going to cover areas that are normally uncovered. Because it causes folds in the skin. She shouldn't open them too much. The same problem. Because it causes folds on top. But she should have it lightly closed. So the bottom line is that a woman should go to the mikvah in sort of a relaxed position, and that normal and relaxed position will be fine. Sif Yudzayin. So this is what we mentioned before, that an area that sometimes is exposed to the water, but not all the time, like underneath the arms, so that has to be clean. But what deep inside the nose or the ears, let's say, where it never comes in contact with water normally at all anyways. So there, she doesn't even have to clean at all. But deep in the nose, that's not a problem at all. And a woman shouldn't do that because she's just going to hurt herself. And also, she needs to remove the wax from the ears, but only what's seeable from the outside. Anything deep inside that's not doesn't really come in contact with water ever, that's not a problem. Now, in a similar idea, there are those that say that a woman should urinate before she goes to the mikvah. The reason, again, is because if she's holding it in, that could also sort of make herself in a funny position, that the water doesn't go where it needs to go. So, again, it should say she should be relaxed, she should use the bathroom if she needs to before, that she didn't be holding herself in. And because then it could cause folds of the skin that would make it that it's not going to be able to come in contact with the water properly. But these things are just stringencies, and if she forgot to be careful about it, these things, as far as using the bathroom and likewise, it's not a problem if she went to the mikveh anyways. Sif Yurchas. What if she has dust on her feet? So she should really clean it off. But if she did go to the mikvah, if it's thin, a thin type of dirt or sand or dust that comes right off when you go into the water, also the tefillah will be fine, because the minute she puts her foot into the mikvah, that the dust should go off, and therefore we can assume that she had a proper tefillah. So if you test, stam kinim uferushim enin bakim baguf. A regular lice and other types of insects that, especially in those days, were common people to be on people's body. So since they don't adhere strongly to the body, then they're not going to be a problem of a chatzitza. and therefore the water goes where it needs to go, and it's not a problem. Well, min kinim hadvukim bebasar, but like a tick that is connected, that hangs on to the person, v'nashches bar b'makom seir, that they bite into the skin where there's hair, v'nedbaka is b'chayzik bebasar, and they're very tightly attached, z'richalasirim, they should be removed, ayde chamin, ulagarim b'tziparim, they should be removed with warm water, and be scraped off with the fingernail, v'meni yuchalasirim, and if they cannot be removed, then it's not a chatzitza. V'aisan kinim, and those kinim ketana is hadvukus v'sairis that are stuck to the hairs. Tzrichal asiron, they have to be removed. Mivnei mishum dehavin chatzitza, because they are chatzitza. Now, what's the reason why certain ones are not a chatzitza? So the idea is because since it's sort of part of the body, then it's okay. Now, certain ones are and certain ones are not. It's sort of unclear what the difference is. But these are some of the general rules that we find in the Paiskim. And hopefully today, they're not going to be such an issue. Sivchav. Isha sheyesh lo kliyay sarez tevukasu bazu. There was a condition spoken about in the early Rishayim that if a woman has braids in her hair, and they're davuk one to the other, shakar and balosh and ashkenaz mar tsep oy mar lakin, they have different names for them. Balosh and poil and verusian, Polish and Russian, it's called kaltunis. So there was, for some reason, they believed that if it was to be removed, then it would be dangerous. V'yesh lakana legalchem, and for whatever reason they felt it was dangerous to remove them. It was had to do with shadim, and had to do with certain metaphysical ideas that they were concerned about. So it's not a chatzitza. Why? Because since they believe that if they were to remove them, it would be a sakana, it would be dangerous, then she wants them there because she doesn't want to be in a dangerous position. Even if there are some strands, that they can't be seen, that they can't remove them, if you can't see it outside, it's not a problem. Now, they use this concept to discuss, what about if a person has something, some sort of medical device that they need to survive? So they argue based on this that you see that the reason why these locks of hair are not a chatzitza is because if she would remove them, she felt that her life would be in danger. So basically anything that if she removes them, she feels her life will be in danger, that will be okay. And there's a discussion, well, according to that, what about if a woman is in a cast? So, is the cast a chatzitza or not? And on a simple level, we mentioned before that according to many opinions, if she'd rather not have the problem, then it's called a chatzitza, according to some opinions. But there are those that want to say that if she always has to be in the cast forever, for some reason, then that might not be a problem, just like these braids of hair, which forever, she always needed forever, and they were a sakana. But usually a cast, you know, a person only has for a couple of months, and then they get out of it, so therefore that would be a chatzitza. But other devices, let's say that would be attached to the body, and she always needs them, maybe like a prosthetic limb or something like that, so that could be considered part of her, and she needs it to live on, and therefore that may be a more modern application of this halacha.